Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, who's that?
That's Lyle.
Hi, Lyle. Good morning. Anyone else online?
No.
Hi, Dave.
Hello?
Hi, this is Elizabeth.
How's it going?
Pretty well. We're getting into hot weather out here already.
Oh, so are we.
Oh, really? Okay. Pretty well this morning. How about yourself?
I'm okay. I'm a little tired. My speakerphone is not well. I'm sorry. I got distracted. I wonder what that is.
Good morning, Dick.
Good morning.
I've been staring at international Halley Watch data all morning, trying to figure out what the hell was going on 15 years ago.
Oh, that's fun. I always love archaeology trips in the future.
Yeah, I thought it might be certainly more fruitful than trying to figure out what the hell is going on now.
Good morning, Boris.
Good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. How's life?
Pretty well.
Made it to another telecon. It's got to be good, right?
Yes.
Don't talk to me about life.
I think we have an exciting agenda.
Yeah, well, hopefully it'll be a short one. Hi, Ron. Ron is here.
Ron?
So we're missing rings, imaging, and geo.
Well, I'm not sure if anybody from Geo is going to call in, because I imagine that Ed is at the MEPAG meeting, the Mars Exploration Program Advisory Group.
Okay.
I don't know if Susie's there or not. I will be going out there tomorrow.
Okay. Where is that taking place, Lyle?
The Holiday Inn in Monrovia.
Oh, I ran into somebody else who was heading over there this morning. Okay, yeah. All right, why don't we go ahead and dive in. As I said in my email, we've got two SDRs I'd like to just sort of discuss what happened, why they did not pass the Management Council vote, and what we're going to do with them. My impression on the checksum SDR is that people in general want the checksums, but that there were problems with the specifics of the SDR that caused it to fail. The biggest issue that seems to be out there is the concern that was raised by GEO about not requiring the checksums to be included on the archive volume. Hi, who's there?
This is Keith Bennett and Susie Slavny.
Keith and Susie, great. We were just going ahead and diving into the checksum SDR. And I mentioned already that the primary concern you guys had was the requirement that the checksums actually be included on the volume. There were some concerns about when we start requiring this. We had recommended to the Management Council that this SDR be adopted as a version 3.8 of the standards, and there was some concern that we should push that off until PDS4. And then, Dick, you had commented about the example that we provide for the format of the checksum file should have the file specifications in uppercase, given that we still have a requirement that PDS path name be in uppercase, and MD5D will produce whatever the local volume is. It will replicate whatever case is used on the local file system.
Didn't we change that to be not in uppercase?
We talked about it, and it's still on the agenda, in the queue. We never did resolve it. We got caught up in debates about mixed case and all that kind of stuff.
Well, if we're not allowed to have mixed case or lower case on the volume, wouldn't it self-resolve?
Yes, the point that Dick made, that is not clear to me, no.
No, that's exactly the point. Why should we be giving examples that have lowercase file names when we don't even allow them?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, right,
exactly.
Right. I would say the example is probably incorrect. But
yeah, it's a
right.
stupid example.
Right, okay, yeah, that's okay. I was not saying it properly, but that's basically the idea. Yes, we need to change the example to have the file names all in uppercase.
Now, you do realize that whether file names on CDs and DVDs show up as uppercase or lowercase is entirely dependent on the local...
But I think in general that when it's a CD, whether you give it an upper or lowercase, it self-resolves within the driver.
Possibly. I don't know what the checksum routine will do, though, if it encounters uppercase in the file and the driver returns lowercase.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I don't know either, and it might be very system-dependent, too.
It is incredibly system-dependent, and I guess my ultimate point is I don't care, because anybody who is... aware enough or educated enough to use the checksums can force the lines in the checksum file to upper or lowercase as needed.
I think the issue here is we don't, with this SDR, want to get into the whole issue of whether we should have upper or lowercase. That's a separate SDR. What we do need to do is correct our example to match current PDF standards, which means the example needs to be in uppercase. Okay. When we resolve the issue of allowing lowercase, then we'll go ahead and change the example. I certainly don't intend to include any text along with that example that insists on uppercase, because that's documented in other places in the standards reference. Does that sound fair to everybody?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I think in terms of resolving the required versus optional, I guess I'm going to ask you guys to correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing is, yes, we do want to require checksums, but no... There is a sufficient number of nodes that do not want to require that those checksums be included on the archive volume. Is that a correct assessment?
No, I don't think we've even agreed that we want to require checksums. I think they're valuable in a lot of cases, but my understanding was we were willing to require them in PDS-4, but we weren't going to require them now.
Okay.
I think we agreed on that, and I was surprised when the SCR came out saying that they would be required now.
Dick, if I remember correctly, that is actually the issue where we split halfway, split 4-4. Geo and atmospheres, I guess, could you please address that issue in terms of what your understanding is or what you guys want?
Okay, for Geo, this is Ed's opinion, but we all share it, and I'm reading his words. We do want checksums to be required from data providers when they send data to us. That is, we will start requiring them at some point, just, you know, for our own purposes. We do not want them to be required to put on the archive volume.
Okay, and Lyle?
Atmospheres concurs with everything Susie just said.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, though? Do you view the checksums only as something that the provider gives to the node, or is this something that is to become part of the archive for future use, too?
I have an answer ready for that one. We have three purposes for using checksums. One is to verify the transfer of data to us from the data provider.
Right.
For us to validate our holdings to make sure that things have not changed over time.
Right.
And finally, to give checksums to users if they request them for a particular file, a set of files. So all of those goals can be accomplished without having the checksums stored on the volume.
But I guess I was just wondering if you really wanted to kind of use the checksum in all three of those circumstances, or whether it was more limited in how you want to use it.
No, I guess I'm not understanding the question. Those are the circumstances we would plan to use it.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is Steve. I'd like to follow up on what Todd was saying. The way this is going, it sounds like it's just simply a local node requirement on handling data being delivered and distributed. And it's almost like a recommendation. I'm wondering why do we even have this SCR if there's no requirements on it?
I think, Steve, that's kind of what Ed and I came to the conclusion that this is, I hate to say this word, but it's a kind of a policy issue. We would like that there is a policy that every node works with their data providers to get checksums from them. I think that's just good practice. But we don't think that it therefore follows that checksums should be archived on the volume.
But does that give you leverage to actually require it from the provider if it's not a requirement?
Well, if we need leverage, we have other ways of doing it, like we would put it in our ICD agreement with the providers that, where we spell out how things are delivered. We would just include we need a manifest with checksum. And I think we don't have any trouble selling that to the providers. That's getting to be kind of a standard thing.
I don't know that it's always a problem to sell them on it, but it's become kind of a problem to actually get them to do it.
You don't accept the data unless they do it.
Oh, yeah, that really works.
Well?
Yeah, Mike, I know where you're getting, but I think standard practice ought to be that we require checksums from our data providers. It's just kind of common sense.
But don't, wait, you just said require it. So you're willing to require it for the provider, but not require it for the archive.
Right, because I think it is.
Okay, but then I think that answers Steve's question as to why it's an SCR. We are going to require it.
No. Well, okay, I think actually the way I would answer Steve's question is, number one, we require checksums. Number two, how they are delivered is up to the negotiation between the node and the data provider. Number three, if they are included on the archive, here's how you do it. And that's where the SCR specifically comes in, is describing the method for including SCRs when they are, including checksums when they're included on an archive volume.
Yeah, I think the original SCR was triggered by the fact that someone was proposing keywords that would go into labels.
That is correct. And we still have an unresolved issue in a separate SCR of how do we provide checksums for individual data objects. We decided to separate those two out in order to address the simpler issue of the file checksums first.
But I'm hearing that there is no requirement for keeping in the archive.
Well, from two of them.
Right. Well,
that's the issue before us, right? So the SCR failed because people didn't want to require it in the archive. But now it seems that we do want to require it on delivery.
And
it still seems to be a local thing.
Yeah, what I would kind of, I guess, offer at this point is PDS as a whole has a responsibility to ensure the integrity of the archives as a general objective, right? We have to make sure we keep the data safe and it has long-term preservation. The question following from that sort of requirement is how do we plan to accomplish that? And the checksum is one way of doing that, and I thought that's why we were pursuing this as a requirement for the archive. Is it will become our mechanism for ensuring the long-term integrity of the archive itself.
And also, if you look at the current set of requirements we have, level 1 and level 2, and now level 3, it's clear that there's requirements for preservation. And as Todd is saying, one way to do ensure integrity of the archive is preservation, to check some. So it could be derived the archive. But if you're talking about delivery, there is no requirement for that right now. It still seems to be just a local node management function trying to deal with the data that's coming in. Granted, it's important, but we really don't even have requirements for that right now in the formal requirements list.
And we should probably also note that it's entirely possible, legal, easy to do, in fact, to include a checksum file with a description of what's in it in any archive volume now. Without
exactly.
Any change to the standard.
Sure. Exactly. You can go ahead and do everything that we're talking about right now if you want to.
That is true. But if we are attempting to at least provide some guidance on the production of a file that will work with currently available utilities, I think there's still some value in having this recommended format for how we include those checksums on a volume.
I have a question for Susie and the Geo node. Is there any kind of plan? What happens if wherever the geosciences node gets nuked or a huge earthquake or something like that, and all the geo data has to get gotten out of NSSDC on the archive volumes? At that point, where do you have checksums if they're not on the volumes?
Well, that opens up another topic that I was going to save for another discussion, and it's just basically node backup. We would have the checksums in our node database, and we would like to have backups of that database. So we normally would keep them backups here on site and somewhere off site, but not necessarily, out of the earthquake zone or whatever.
But you're not counting on the NSSCC for that backup. You're going to have some other backup.
We would not have our database that includes checksums. We would not have that at NSSCC. But there is sort of a larger issue that we've been talking about internally that we'll raise another time, which is maybe every node should consider where it keeps its off-site backups, and really far off-site. And it would kind of make sense for us here in St. Louis to have our backups kept somewhere on either coast, you know, out of the New Madrid earthquake zone. But that's another topic. So I see the point that you're getting at. If we don't have the checksums on the volume, how can we validate them?
Or actually, where is the designated place within the archive to preserve them long-term? That was kind of my question. If they're not on the volume, where will they be stored if the purpose of them is to ensure long-term, you know, integrity of the archive?
Exactly.
And I don't think putting them on a backup system somewhere that isn't archived is maybe the best place for them.
Yeah,
if the purpose is to play a role within the long-term integrity.
You have the checksums on the volume, and you're worried about the volume's integrity, how can you trust the checksums? I mean, they're just subject to decay.
They are, but I mean...
Well, I guess the point there is that no matter where you store the checksums, whether they're on the volume or on a separate media somewhere, you still have the problem of potential loss.
Okay,
and sure, co-storing them maybe makes them susceptible to the same, catastrophe, I guess.
To be fair on that front, I mean, a checksum file is a nasty file. If you've got two copies of that file, one, you know, on two separate DVD volumes or on a DVD volume somewhere online, all you have to do is compare the two files. You're going to find the one record that's different or the two records. And then if you actually run that particular record, the chances of that same file having been corrupted are fairly remote. So it's going to be pretty easy to figure out an error in a checksum file as opposed to determining where you've got errors in the vast number of data files you have in your archive.
And you consider the checksum against the checksum file.
That's true.
Keep that in a separate, you know, keyword value and use that for volume.
Yeah, you put that in the label.
And the point of the checksum is just to detect that a corruption has happened, and not to any way resolve the corruption.
It doesn't. Yeah, there's not enough information there to do that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if either your checksum file gets corrupted or one of the files gets corrupted, when you run the checksum utility, it tells you, hey, there's not a match here, which then you have to figure out what the cause of the problem is.
Yeah.
But I'm still concerned, as Susie said, is that, you know, ultimately the nodes will be recommended as doing that. So what I'm hearing is from the level ones and level twos, there is a preservation requirement. This is not going to be recommended. Ultimately, it will be required. There will be checksum files or some way to ensure the integrity of the data.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm worried about is we're adding a whole new level of system engineering here and trying to manage this additional resource now called a checksum file when we already have a way to do it.
You mean the way to do it is to put it in on the volume?
Put it on the volume.
Right.
If we're going to keep it in some type of remote repository, then you got the issue that I think Susie said, which is you've got to back up somewhere, you have to make sure the backups are online, you make sure that these are being maintained. I mean, there's all sorts of quality assurance involved.
Steve, if we follow what Elizabeth just said about having two versions of the checksum file, you would have one on the volume, you'd have one that you kept somewhere else so that you compare them, then you still have that system engineering problem of where do you keep the somewhere else file. Otherwise,
I thought Elizabeth was referring to sort of the three-copy rule that we sort of have.
Oh, the three copies in a system.
Yeah.
Actually,
the three copies are distributed, I thought. One at the node, one at NSSDC, and one at some other location.
Some other place.
Yeah. Which is the archive level of operations, not the online, which is, you know, all this hot sites and backup sites and mirror sites and all that other stuff. Details we haven't worked out yet.
Lyle, could we hear some more details on your concerns about this whole thing?
Well, the first thing, of course, is that I don't really think that it should be required to be on the volume until we move to PDS 4.
Okay. really pin you down here. PDS-4, you would feel that having a requirement to include them on the volume is a fair requirement.
I think in PDS-4, anything is on the table.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
With PDS-3, we're constantly making changes to the data dictionary and the standards reference, and any kind of automated tools that might use the data dictionary or the standards reference as a reference point, if something needs to be added, such as a keyword, to the data dictionary, suddenly that tool is going to insist that this file be there, even if it was not necessarily required when the SIS was written. There's just too much potential for confusion and breaking validation tools.
Ron, do you want to respond to that?
Well, in our last discussion, or one of the previous discussions, we had agreed that this would go into effect in the next release of the standard. And, of course, the tools are going to support whatever we agree in this SDR.
But yes, I understand that, Ron, but the problem is that people continue to use validation tools, even if they were using, say, version 3.6 of the standards.
Well, fine. So let's say they're using an older version, and the tool will come back and say that keyword isn't there. And possibly it's going to say that checksum doesn't match. But so it's going to show up in a validation report, and it'll be really annoying. But it's not going to break anything.
How far along?
But I have a question here. I mean, if you start putting the checksum file on, isn't it kind of implied that you're adhering to the higher level standards if you use an old tool to validate, and it says something's wrong, you probably should use a newer tool.
I think the concern is more the other way around. When we've got, say, Cassini, which is doing archiving, but doing archiving to an older standard,
right.
When they use the modern validation tools, it's going to report an error if they have a checksum file.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought part of the requirements of the new validation tool was you can pick which release version you're validating to.
Does
that validation tool exist, Todd?
That's what I wanted to
ask.
Well,
no, that's what they're building.
Well, I know, but it doesn't exist yet.
That's right, but we're not even building anything yet to this new version of the standards.
Okay, here I guess is the issue then. If this particular validation step does not go into the tools until those tools are capable of validating against a particular version of the standards, does that solve the problem for you, Lyle?
I'm going to repeat that.
Okay, if the particular validation step that checks for the existence of a checksum table or file doesn't show up in the validation tools until those tools are capable of recognizing and validating against a particular version of the standards, does that solve the problem for you? Am I making sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I think what you're saying is that you'll have a standard, but the tool won't check for it. And that doesn't seem to make any more sense than having a tool that reports an error that's not valid.
Well, I guess what I'm wondering is, does it make any sense for us to be, and I'm a little out of the loop on this, so I may be speaking out of place, but are new requirements being built into our old validation tools, or are they simply being built into the new validation tools that do validate against?
Elizabeth, I guess maybe I should just use the example of the validation tool that ESA has built.
Yeah.
Okay. Their tool essentially works on the data dictionary.
Okay.
Okay. So if you make any changes to the data dictionary, then that's what it's validating to.
Okay, but the inclusion of this file would not show up in the data dictionary, would it?
This is not a change to the data dictionary, no.
Well, I'm not sure, but you're now making it a required file, right?
Yeah, but files aren't listed in the data dictionary, only keywords.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it shouldn't affect the European tool. The question is, what about the tools here? I can't answer that question. I'm going to need to go to other people in the engineering node to get an answer to that.
Well, the product validation tool would validate a table, and you have a table, so that's
yes,
but
not, okay, but I guess the issue is will an
is
error
is there a tool that archives an entire volume, checking for all required files, such as the index file and would be the checksum file and the valdes.cat file and all that stuff? I don't know
but
of any
existing,
tool.
Existing
yeah.
tools?
Yeah.
The validation bottom by is a volume validator.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a tool that does that.
Right. Now, the question is, would that specific existing tool be updated with this new requirement, or would the requirement only be fed into the new validation tools that are being written and be version dependent?
The extent of the new tools is not clear. The current work being done.
What tool does that? Because I'm not aware of it. I'm just curious.
PVT.
What?
The PVT, I forget what it stands for. It's the volume validator.
Okay. Thank you.
It's the Perl script, basically, that just
right.
runs a series of programs. You know. And so that could be changed. Yeah, it could be changed. But I'm saying that the future tools, the scope of the future tools, not completely defined yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is the disconnect, I'm just wondering if the disconnect here is the timing of these new tools versus the timing of the new standards, I guess.
It's partly that, but I think this is primarily what we're trying to do is address Lyle's concern, and it's a valid concern that, you know, even though we don't officially require a change until X version, the fact is if that change goes into our existing tools, he will be getting error reports on old
sure,
or in progress data.
As I understand it, the old validation tools spit out a lot of stuff we ignore anyway.
And this is true for any change to the standards, not
yes,
just this
is,
particular checksum. So, I mean, are we freezing ourselves from making changes to the standards until we have new versions of the tools?
That's a good point.
That would be dangerous, I think.
That would be called configuration control, guys.
Which we're trying to move towards, but we're not there
yeah,
yet.
Yes, exactly.
So, Lyle, let me ask, do you see an overall benefit of putting this information on the volume? Excuse me, on the volume?
Oh.
No.
No. I, as far as I'm concerned, a user does not, most of the time, care about checksum.
Okay, but what about use to you in terms of validating the integrity of your data?
Well, certainly it's useful to me. That doesn't mean I want it on the volume.
Okay.
But what if
it's submitted to me in some separate form, that's perfectly fine.
But this is really not a user issue. It's a requirement issue of integrity of the archive. You just don't care about integrity necessarily unless the data is wrong. So it's our responsibility to make sure the data is correct, and this is helping us do that.
You know, I think we're getting caught in a logical fallacy here of arguing from the whole to the parts, and you can't do that.
The requirement is that we verify delivery, that we know what we've got. That doesn't mean any particular method for doing it, which might be completely contemporary. We need to verify delivery. We don't necessarily need to specify how that verification is going to be done for the next 25 years, nor do we need to include tools that are intended to verify transfers of data, like checksums, in the permanent archive volume.
I didn't think we were verifying deliveries. I thought we were verifying the long-term preservation or corruption of the archive.
There's multiple issues involved. There's making sure that we have got what the data provider sent us or intended to send us. There's making sure that that data stays.
Well, then this SDR doesn't necessarily address the first one because we don't, here at the Asteroid subnode, we don't make volumes until after the data preparer has sent us data. So,
to at least send those
can you repeat?
To you, then you do have that then you can validate your data.
Well, that's not what this requirement requires. It's not saying anything about the data provider sending me checksums.
Okay, and this is why we're having this whole discussion. We need to. What I'm trying to move towards is figuring out. Okay, number one, we all agree, I think, on the requirement that data providers have to provide checksums. The issue is when, and do we mandate how?
Why actually, can I back up one level? Yes. And Todd, you need to help us out here. There is no requirement for delivery. There's a checksum for delivery. There might be a requirement from what I can tell, deriving one from a level 3 that you guys have just come up with, the working group, there is definitely a level 2 requirement for long-term preservation, which implies some type of integrity check, which checksum is one possible function for doing that.
Right.
So the delivery, I don't see that even as a requirement yet. And that's definitely my initial question. What is the requirement for this OCR?
But I think where this trickles down into a provider requirement on the provider is for those situations where the provider is really delivering a final volume to PDS, which passes through the node into the archive.
Okay, but I would
argue. So there's a trickle down there, and I think that's kind of what I hear a little bit from Gio.
What I would argue, though, is that whether or not they're providing a final volume or simply products that you then assemble into a volume, you still, in some form, and I don't care what, should require that they deliver some kind of a checksum or some method of verifying that the data that they sent you is, in fact, the data that you received.
Intuitively, I totally agree with you, but there is no requirement for that.
Okay.
Right, but that's a kind of node to provider interface issue.
What I'm saying is
this is an archive level issue.
Todd, actually, this is a side issue, but I'm kind of pushing back on you in the working group is I don't see how we could derive that given the current set of requirements.
Okay.
But anyway, that's another issue.
Do we need to then push back on the MC or whoever's coming up with requirements and say we believe this is an important requirement to get in there?
I think that's going
to
help solve this OCR issue. Until we have a requirement, the data provider has to provide to us checksums to ensure integrity. We're simply saying it's a recommendation. We'd like to do it, or, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree there. There's no requirement, and there probably shouldn't be a requirement that the provider give us a checksum, but the long-term preservation requirement, once you get it into the archive, in other words, once it passes out of the node into the archive, then we need some mechanism. And that's
exactly.
what this is about.
And this OCR directly addresses that, and it says that we have to have the checksum for the archive, which is what I keep people hearing arguing against.
Right. I don't think anybody here is disagreeing that we, in the PDS, once we have data, have some responsibility to make sure that the integrity of that data is maintained over time. I do believe that we should be pushing that requirement back to the data providers as well. In imaging, I mean, if I had not received checksums on some of the Mars Pathfinder data, we would have received corrupted data because I found errors because I had checksums. And
we need
to make that requirement.
We need to make the requirement clear. Right now we're arguing whether or not it's a useful thing.
Okay.
And whether somebody should do it or not, or whether we make a recommend notes to it.
Now, I guess what I'm hearing, if I could try and distill this, not as part of this SDR, but more as a policy issue that we need to push back on our requirements document, make it clear that data providers are required to provide some mechanism for us to verify the integrity of the data that they give to us. We won't specify mechanism.
Why don't you get a vote on that?
Does anyone disagree with that, first of all?
I'm a little uneasy with it, but in principle, I don't think I disagree with it. I have to contemplate it a bit. Because we now converted this into what will the interface requirements be between providers and PDS.
No, I disagree with that. What we are saying is here is what they must, they have to provide a mechanism for data integrity. We are leaving the mechanism up to the node and the data provider to negotiate among themselves. As a policy statement, we're saying we need to validate the integrity of that data delivery.
I'm equally uncomfortable.
Okay,
but, well, same reason. I think we need a way to make sure the right stuff gets to the node when it's delivered, but I'm not sure that we need to go a whole lot further. I agree a checksum is a very convenient way of doing it, but I'm not sure that we need this in order to get there.
Okay, but Dick, I did not say anything about checksum. All I said is exactly what you said, which is we need to make sure that the data gets delivered to the node. We need to validate that delivery.
Yeah, but I think that's between the node and the provider.
The mechanism is between the node and the provider. The requirement seems to me to be a higher level requirement that the PDS needs to agree upon as a policy issue.
I'm not sure I see an issue. If the data provider provides corrupted data, I don't call that a delivery.
Okay, but how do you know it's corrupted data?
Well,
that's what I'm getting at. Unless we make sure that there is some mechanism.
In the past, it was called the peer review.
Well, it's not just the peer review. When you get a disk that you can't read or something like that, you say,
okay,
try again.
I'm going to get back to this example on Pathfinder again and again and again, because I got data from the real-time delivery system that had a small portion of an image rotated. Because of the nature of these images, nobody looking at that file would have known there was anything wrong with it. There would be no problems opening it up. All of our tools would read. All of our tools would work. No peer reviewer was going to notice a problem. I discovered a problem because the data did not match the checksum provided in the label. That kind of error can only be discovered if we have some kind of a validation mechanism.
I don't see how the checksum would even tell you there was an error there. I mean, a rotated image is still a good image.
No, it was not the entire image. It was a portion of the image that was rotated.
Okay.
And the MD5 checksums do show that difference. A regular, an old-fashioned checksum would not. Actually, it would, because, the old-fashioned checksum would not. The MD5 would.
That's why you probably shouldn't be using the word checksum.
Well, and again, I believe at a policy level, we don't tell the nodes how to do this. But we do say it needs to be validated.
Well, validated is an ambiguous term, though, because he originally interpreted that as just opening the CD and seeing if it's readable.
Okay, listen, I don't care what wording we use. If somebody's got better wording, suggest it. Do you agree with the point that I am trying to make?
Geo agrees.
Imaging agrees.
Geo has to leave at 20 minutes from now for a Doomer Dog telephone.
All right.
Already, okay. Science agrees. I'm just not sure that it's any different from what we've been doing.
Okay, how about, it sounds like people agree on this point. I obviously need to work on the wording. I will try and work with some of you to see if I can come up with some wording that isn't going to push all kinds of buttons with folks. Okay, the second point. So we agree that we need some kind of a mechanism from the point of the data providers to validate the delivery. Second point.
Well, let's say that they need to agree. What you're saying is it's up to the data provider to do this. I'm not sure that that's always a satisfactory solution.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I want to move on. Figure out the wording on that particular issue. Second point is we all agree that the nodes have a responsibility to maintain the integrity of the archives over time. Now, this is where we get into a debate about whether or not we should require a specific mechanism. And what I am hearing from the vote, the MC vote, is we do not have a majority that agrees that we should require a specific mechanism. So, again, we have a responsibility that can be derived from our current level 3 requirement. That says that our nodes have to maintain the integrity of their data over time. I think we need to change the SDR to make it clear that that negotiation, too, is between the data node and the provider.
No. No. That's internal to PDS.
Okay, fine. It's internal to the node is actually what I'm hearing, not internal to PDS.
No. It should be a PDS-wide.
Okay, Todd, I agree with you. I would like to see it as a PDS-wide agreement. But what I am hearing is that the reason that this thing went down in flames at the MC level is because we do not have enough nodes that want to sign on to a specific mechanism.
Can I offer a suggestion at this point?
Okay.
I would actually simply put it this way, that if a node does not plan to use a checksum file or checksums as validation, what would they use? Because we have a requirement to do it, and if they have a better alternative, I'd like to hear it. I'd like to adopt a better alternative.
Well, I think what I'm hearing is that basically they do intend to use checksums, but they want to put it in their own database in their own way and collect it in their own way and run programs against it in their own way. They don't want to be told that it has to be in X format in Y place.
Okay, but then how do you... as an implementation, that's fine, but then they have to answer the question, okay, I have something I suspect is being bad. How do I determine?
Well, but I don't think that that's a difficult issue. I mean, if I can argue on Geo's behalf, what they're saying in this case is, I want to keep these checksums in this database. I will maintain the software that verifies the integrity of my data. If I detect a problem, it will be by running all of my data files and comparing them against the checksums that I have in my database. I don't want somebody to tell me to put that file on an archive.
But that kind of goes counter to... what I consider to be standing PDS policies in regards that you should not rely on software to validate an archive in this, in that way. You know, I'm not saying this very clearly, but you shouldn't rely on some soft thing for the long term.
Okay, I'm not following you quite, because I mean, even if they're on the archive, you still have to rely on software to do the comparison.
Well, the thing is that you don't have to rely on
something
so much
external.
A system.
You're talking about more about the issue of having all the components of the archive included in one spot.
In the archive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
I
agree with you on that point, but again, that's the specific point where I'm not sure we can win this SDR. I think there are enough nodes that disagree with that policy, or that particular point, that I'm not sure we can get it passed.
I think it's just a challenge.
And that is that what we're saying here is GSR didn't pass because the nodes want individual solutions, not the ESY solution. There is a requirement that it wants they're going to do it individually at the nodes. There'll be no PDSY solution given the way the SDR is going.
I agree. I think that's
and
what
that's what the nodes wants, and then we can do that.
Okay. Now again, if we take that as a given, what I argue that this SDR can do is say, if the mechanism that you choose is checksums and you do want to include them in a volume, here is how you do it. And that's the specific role that this SDR has. Is there agreement on that?
Do you agree?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
There's a lot of ifs there.
It is.
They want to have a policy that states that, but then I think you've moved out of the standards into a policy because you've got nothing but a large bunch of recommendations.
Well, what we basically have is two policies, and if you put it in the archive, you then apply this standard to it, and that's why this is still a standards SDR. We do need to deal with the two policy issues separately.
Okay.
But there is a place for the standard statement of how we include this in the archive when it's done.
Then do you feel this sort of wraps up into what the disaster recovery plan of each node is going to be? You know, they have to demonstrate somehow how they're going to recover.
It certainly levies more requirements on the node to say for themselves how they're going to do that, as opposed
right.
to us deciding.
And they could choose this. I guess you're saying now you can choose this as a solution, and that would fulfill at least some list of requirements that's going to come out of what should be in a disaster recovery plan.
I think that's a fair statement, yeah. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Okay. Okay, for a few quick minutes. Sorry,
I was just
going
to say that, but it implies to me that each disaster recovery plan at each node will be different. It'll be
it
based on the standard.
It could be.
But
people could opt into this plan, or they could pick up their own.
Okay.
I'm going to try and modify this SDR and come up with our two policy statements, and then I'll send that out to everybody for your review. Let's try and move on really quickly to the time format SDR. And I'm specifically interested, we have not yet had the opportunity to collect, collect information on why that was disapproved of, which I think would be valuable to CPI. Let's see, we had a no from, Geo voted yes on this, so okay, if you guys have to go, that's okay. I have no's from Ring, Small Bodies, Radio Science, I thought I could put my name vote in here, but it's not in.
Nate.
Forrest, did you guys vote against this? Do you remember?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, we did vote against it.
Okay, I guess I would like those notes to explain why they voted no. Forrest, do you want to start?
Yeah, I can start. It's a very nice proposal, but what will happen if it gets approved is all kinds of time tags will get into PDS-compliant files, and then the users will be left to themselves, at least at this point, because I did not see any tools coming with it or any impact that would indicate that some big tool set will be written to handle that. The users will be left to themselves to handle these times. And anyone who ever tried to convert times from so many different possibilities, so many different possible inputs, knows that it's not a trivial problem. And I don't really see how this would come through and benefit anyone without providing an extensive tool set that would take care of that. And one of the concerns was brought up that current PDS format with T cannot be ingested into Excel. But now imagine we allow all these wonderful time formats and time specifications. Well, who is going to provide a set of macros for Excel to handle those, including leap seconds and elapsed time and so on? So that's the main thing. If we would see a requirement, a set of requirements that all PDFs throughout will be upgraded to handle this, including probably Nave Toolkit, which at the moment doesn't, and maybe some other tools as well, then it would be a different story. But the only impact that was specified is that some tools will have to skip that keyword because it's not really applicable to them, and that's it. So that's the main point that I would make.
Okay, thank you. Rings, do we have Mitch online? I don't think we do. No, there's nobody here from Rings. Full body voted no.
Yes, that's true, and it's basically because the SDR allows proliferation, uncontrolled proliferation of time formats at a time when the PDF is under intense pressure from NASA headquarters and from the user community to consolidate formats and keep things simple. We have a time standard. We should use it.
Time standard only applies to what goes in the label.
That's true, but it is an ISO standard time format. And ISO is an international standard that is recognized.
But that standard only applies to what goes in the labels, not what goes into the data files.
Yes, but the ISO time standard is a standard from the International Standards Organization. It's international. It applies across disciplines. It's well-defined.
It is, but very poorly supported.
Actually, I'd like to follow up on what you said, or your question, because that's similar to my question. Is I thought the whole issue about too many formats dealt with data formats. In other words, we wanted to constrain to standard types of tables.
Right, but we're talking mostly about ASCII tables here.
Right. Yeah. So I was confused, too, about this issue of the proliferation of a time format. Well, simply, it was a formation rule for a particular field. Lots of formation rules.
Within a data file.
Yeah.
I thought you would be all over this because time is one of the very few keywords that actually applies to 95% of PDF data, and you can't possibly search on it within files if you don't know what format it's going to be in.
Well, you're right. I personally would be all over it, and that was going to be my second question. I thought in your discussions of this was that the time would also be available in the standard format somewhere.
In a what format? I'm sorry.
Well, I assume that in the label are in the normal format. What we're talking about is time tagged within an actual data file, right? So you have a time series in your data file, but the format of the time does not have to correspond to the ISO format. You might simply be using seconds from X.
Yes,
it would be a lot more convenient, probably for a user at some point, than trying to parse the standard time format.
Yes, but
for example, if you had a time series and you had this column with a native time in it, and would you also have to have, if it was a standard, related to a, I guess the word is EPA? Then wouldn't you also have to have another column in a standard PDF time format?
No.
No, okay, that was my question. I thought in your discussion you said that if it was possible you would. But.
No, you're using the start time and stop time in the label to search for your generic PDF-wide search, right? But then when you get this file and its label, then the time format within the data file is different than the ISO standard time for what can potentially be very good reasons.
Okay. I'd like to give Dick a chance to explain his reasons for voting no as well, please.
There was one version of the SCR that was circulated by Rita for the vote. A couple of days later, Ray Walker came out with a completely different version of the SCR. I didn't know which one we were supposed to be voting on, which one had been through the approval process, so I just voted no to get the process straightened out.
Okay.
Wow. Have you seen Ray Walker's version?
I have been mailed it, to be honest. I haven't sat down and read it yet. Huh? I need to do that.
Cool.
Stephen, Todd, I'd like to give you guys the floor now to talk about why you'd like to see this thing going forward with needs are, and I know there was an issue that came up about the fact that Joe Zender has also said that he would like to use this time time format thing.
Yeah, I guess this is Todd, and I think Lyle really touched on the point, Lyle and Steve, that this format is only for the content of data files to describe or provide some software usable description of the format of the data stored in a file. It's not meant to allow, say, within a PDF label, using any kind of time format you want for, say, start time and end time. It really limited in scope and really intended only for the content of native data file format. So I think you guys touched on the real purpose of it right there, and so the scope is very limited, and therefore the impact of it is very limited. And, well, it's also part of the documentation that is useful in understanding, you know, ASCII strings that are time formats.
Todd, this is Boris. Let me interrupt. You could put that description anywhere in the documentation that comes with the data set, and the whole purpose is to put it into the keywords, so you would write a piece of software that would handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see those pieces of software in the SDR. I really didn't see any mention of that such software would be coming. So if we don't have a software that would come to help users to handle that, well, why have it there in the label? We could as well have it in the dataset.cat or whatever other piece of information will describe the table.
I think the reason that it probably wasn't there is that we weren't going to make it a requirement that it be supported in tools like, say, TBTool or something like that. But it might be good to do that. I think Steve can talk a little bit about what Joe Zender intended to use this keyword for.
I mean, his intent is the same as ours. I did send Joe email on Monday to see how important he thought getting this into the system was, because, you know, he's been the one that's actually been pushing this for the last year or two. And he did get back to me saying that he thought it was an extremely important, and he didn't understand why those in PDS voted against it. He assumed that they didn't understand its importance.
Steve, do you know if Joe has done any software work on supporting this?
I'm not sure that he has. I know that here at PPI we have a time library that basically supports about 80% of this already. There are some things that we don't support currently that were added into the proposal in order to make it more general. But, you know, we support really all of the tokens that were put out there except for the ones that deal with things like decimal seconds or, you know, decimal hours or things along those lines. We have things for year, month, day, hour, minute, second, day of year, and it uses the same notation with a parentheses, token, parentheses, and you can put whatever delimiters between things that you want. It'll parse a time string based on that. So we've got a good, you know, start towards having a tool set that we could distribute with this.
Well, perhaps an analogy would help a little bit. I mean, when we put floating point numbers in ASCII form, we usually say it's something like 7.3, or we give some notational description of the format. And this is analogous to giving a notational description of the format of a string, which represents a time value.
Yeah, Todd, but there is a difference. Those formats you put for numbers can be cut and pasted into a C program or anything. They're well understood and supported by pretty much everything. But this time format doesn't really have any support in the software. Well, it has 80% in the library that you have, but will this library be available for all the environments, all the tools that Stein's customers will be needing?
Well, originally, I think way, way back when this proposal was first put out, it was considered perhaps using the string tokens, or the tokens that are used by the Unix time tools. You know, there's a certain set of percent this, percent that letters that describe essentially the same tokens. And it thought, I know back then it was considered that that was too obscure. And so the more wordy version was what ended up in the SCR. But you can always perhaps maybe go to a different token set that can be cut and paste into a common tool like the Unix time library stuff.
Let me address Dick's comment a little bit about why there were two versions of the SCR. Unfortunately, the decision to put this to a vote, a management council vote, came at a standards telecon that I wasn't at. I have a tough time making Wednesday mornings. I have another commitment on Wednesday mornings. And so Elizabeth distributed the version of the SCR that was presented to the tech session back in whatever it was, 2002 or something like that. And what came about at that meeting was that the keyword was approved in principle, but that there was a concern that some of the tokens needed to be reworked. And I had extensive comments from Chuck Acton, and I had a few comments from, I believe it was Ann Rao or something. And so what I had done is gone back and tried to address Chuck's and whoever else comments it was. So I had a new version of the SCR. Elizabeth originally distributed the version that went out that said it needed work, that the group decided needed work on the tokens. And the one that Ray distributed a few days later was the one where that work had been mostly accomplished. One thing that Chuck had asked for in his set of comments, which had not been addressed simply because I hadn't gotten around to figuring out how to do it, was whether that there should be a token that said what time system was being represented, whether it was ephemeris time or UTC or international atomic time. There are different time standards. And I didn't get around to putting that in because I wanted to just get the SCR at its current state out. That's why you had sort of two versions of the thing go out. One was the version as originally entered, and one was the version as corrected in response to the directive to do so.
But that's a very poor way to carry out a vote.
Well, like I said, I'm sorry that I wasn't there at the time that decision was made, because the SCR had been distributed before I realized that it was even going to happen.
Yeah, see, this isn't your fault. It's nobody's completely.
Nobody's fault. It's just a...
Yeah, we had a lack of documentation between here and back then, and I thought I'd try to find the latest, greatest version I had.
You had the version that was presented at the time that
the one that was actually voted on.
Was actually voted on.
Okay, so here's the question I have. In the version that was voted on, does it still apply these tokens to columns with the data type equal time?
That was the idea, was that if you had a data type column with data type equals time, you could put in a modifier like this. If you did not put a modifier like this in, it meant that it complied with the existing ISO standards.
I don't know what you mean by modifier like this.
Okay, hang on, folks. I've got a recommendation. Rather than trying to hash this all out on the phone without that second SCR in front of us, what I'm going to recommend is that we essentially move this thing back to its draft
status. Coming in.
And we circulate that second SCR, the second version of the SCR, and let's just deal with this as if we had never recommended it, work it again, and try and get that SCR beaten into a shape where we can agree on it. Go through the whole process again.
It sounds as though Steve still had a couple of things he wanted to finish. So maybe.
Okay. So, yeah, I agree. Steve, why don't you take the time to get that SCR where you want it, we'll distribute it and work on it as if it was at a draft level. Does that sound fair to everyone?
That's fine with me.
Yeah, I just want to note one thing. As long as data type equal time is in the SCR, that's a deal breaker for SBN.
Okay. Piece of data, Steve, to remember.
Okay,
folks. Thank you. I think this has been a productive conversation, but we've definitely got some work ahead. Not everybody agrees, but anyway. And there's also a lot of SCRs that we've got in the queue, and I hope it's looking like there might be a few of them that are ready for discussion soon. So hopefully in 2 weeks we'll have some more stuff to talk about, and I guess I'll see you guys then. Talk to you then. Whatever. Okay.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.